This Do Lectures episode features founder of Environment Water Agency Envisager, David Lloyd Owen, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2019.
Many, many years ago, my mother, at one of my drinks parties, took a friend aside and said, "Oh, I wish one of my children would have a book published." She had different priorities from most mothers. 9 years ago, I did a Do Lecture on water, and afterwards we had a writer's retreat with other friends. And I was trying to work on a novel which I've been working on since 1994, which I'm still working on, but that's another story. But instead, they said, forget your novel. You're telling great stories about water. Write a book. And so I did, and it was a worst seller. But it was a fascinating journey, because I'm now on writing my fourth book and doing what I always love, which is advising people about water. I've always loved painting with words. That's the best way I can express it. The problem has been acquiring honesty. I look back at that first book. The language is over-elaborate, it's flowery, it's evasive. I'm running away from things. I wasn't prepared to address things. I've learnt the hard way about honesty. There's honesty in writing. It's not easy. It's easy to overwrite. It's easy to over-elaborate. Paring back to the honest core is hard. That's where the work is. Then there's honesty in business. I was once told by a chap that I would never become a business leader for a very simple reason. I'm just too honest. Take me to a conference, and I'm afraid my bullshit detector comes on immediately. So, for example, there was one talking about water policy where we had this nice lady from the Scottish government saying that they had worked out the cost of complying with some European legislation to 0.1%. To me, I get up and say, "Yeah, the only problem is the Scottish Parliament's cost 10 times its budgeted amount. So how can you do something to 0.1%? I'm sorry, I don't believe in your bullshit." And that goes down like a bucket of sick. The problem is actually, though, we're always one step away from working in a shitocracy, as I would call it. What is a shitocracy? It's a culture which rewards people for being shits. It's a culture where people have to be seen to be rewarded as shits. And the problem is, someone once said to me, "Why do you keep falling out with people? Why do you have enemies?" And I said, "Because I can't suffer shits anymore." You get the sort of person who thinks it's cool. We were visiting a firm of lawyers, and it's called Denton Wild Sapta. And my colleague was in a lift with a woman in her early 20s and said, "Hey, what's it like to work for Denton Wild Sex?" I mean, that's very clever, isn't it? She felt shat upon. He felt good. He was a shit, and he was being rewarded for being a shit. I got out of this for two ways. First of all, I discovered something 21 years ago called love. I married into love. I married into a loving family. And that had transformed my life. It gave me an honesty and a reason to stop evading things, which had been cornerstone of my existence. Then I discovered about being honest with myself. And ultimately, that was realized by realizing there's no point in working full-time with other people. I've just got to go out on my own, run my own business, be myself. And for the last 16 years, I've done that. We live in a glorious house 10 miles away from here, overlooking Newcastle Emlyn, with people I want to be with people who I love. And that is a way of being creative. Work is a fascinating thing, though. Work is a people business. I used to work in the city, the old-fashioned city, before the Big Bang. And I've discovered that in the information industry, there are three types of people. There's the finder, the natural salesman, the chap or chapess who, whenever you're at a conference, he's out there shaking hands, handing out business cards. He just is addicted to meeting people. Then you have the connector, the person who loves to build relationships. And then finally, you have what I would call the honest drudge, the grinder, the maven, which is me, the one who actually does the job. And people don't understand how, how distinct, yet how interrelated these relationships are. A mate of mine, who recently retired as a senior partner in a city firm of lawyers, had not done a bit of legal work in 40 years, but nor was he meant to. His job was to go out and shake hands and bring business in for the grinders. I grind. I dredge out information for people. I actually have to confess, I utterly, unrequitedly love it. Taking information from academic research, taking raw data, making it make sense to people, making the incomprehensible comprehensible. It got to the point where, discovering this thing called honesty, I found, last year I had an academic textbook published, and it was readable. This is actually quite a controversial subject, because the more readable an academic text is, the less people trust it. We want to be bemused. But there are actual oases of loquaciousness in this text. It's a strange thing. So subversive in a way. So I got into all this a long time ago. 40 years ago, a fellow undergraduate earnestly came up to me and said, "David, for goodness sake, don't change your degree course. There's no future in ecology." So what did I do? I got that degree and I did a doctorate in applied ecology. And some of which I was, when a job hunting was there, "Oh, you're overqualified." So we moved from a shitocracy to a cretinocracy. The dumber and dumber. Let's reward imbecilism. Of course, which is exactly what we live in. I mean, Britain, America, it's a rush to the bottom. Who can have the greater imbecile running us? And by God, the competition is strong. So, I have spent the last 30 years trying to make sense of water to people. I've learned one huge lesson in those 30 years, which is people are not going to change. Far too few people are prepared to take water seriously. Now, 4 years ago, we had something called the Sustainable Development Goals. Sustainable Development Goal 6 is that by 2030, everyone in the world will have access to safe water and safe sanitation, and indeed sewage treatment. Problem is, when reality reels its ugly head. So last week, we got the review of how things have gone in the first 2 years of this process. One third of all countries in the world still don't even know how many people have access to safe water or safe sanitation. We are living in a world where there's information is an utter vacuum. How are we going to do something about this? Can we do something about this? Now, as in the spirit of the Do lectures, it's two things. It's one is your professional métier. The other one is the story. So my story is about smart, being smart. How water and the entire business of water and the delivery of water can be fundamentally, disruptively changed by smart thinking. As you can imagine, water is a conservative business. If your mobile phone loses your signal, it doesn't matter, it's a hassle. If brown stuff comes out of your tap, or even worse, up your loo, that's not a hassle. That is insufferable. Water utility simply cannot afford to make a mistake. As a result, the way we treat sewage today is almost identical to a process invented in 1913. We haven't moved very much on from 1804 for water treatment. The biggest innovation in water at the moment was perfected in 1989, 30 years for it to become commercial. I was at a conference discussing mega trends, the big things that affect water. And one of the speakers said, well, Everything is out there already. We are not going to see any innovations which we don't know about before 2035. That sort of attitude is utterly corrosive, because it means that we're stuck with what we have, when in fact what we need is innovation and optimism. Everyone talks about water being scarce. It isn't. It's abundant. The entire world works as a single, colossal, fast desalination facility. Water comes up from the sea and it falls down from onto our land pure. What we have a shortage of is money, management and policy. But the water itself is abundant. As Lord Kelvin once said, what we cannot measure, we cannot manage. And that is the essence of water. We know so little about how we use it. So we have a passive attitude about the way we deal with our water. You get a leak. Oh, you deal with the leak when it becomes visible. But when it becomes visible, it might have already carved out a hole many, many cubic meters. You have lost millions of cubic meters of water. There are countries where 75% of the water they put into the pipes doesn't actually make it to the customer. That's where the shortage comes from. So, let's take another look. I'm going to work, and all of a sudden my MOB flashes up, and it says, you have an unnatural or unusual amount of water being used last night. A, we've turned off your valve. B, we're getting someone to fix it. All of a sudden, we've moved into the world of smart water. We're living in real time, because what has happened? You have a smart meter in your house. So instead of having your water measured, if at all, once or twice a year, it's being measured every 15 minutes, every 15 seconds. Every part of the network is being measured in real time. Pressure, leakage, three different ways of measuring leakage. So big bursts, little slurps, everything is being measured. We're living in a smart street. We're living in real time. Smart water is about gathering every bit of data we can, transmitting it somewhere, crunching the numbers, and presenting what managers and people need. It's also about a two-way street. Instead of us being passive users of water, we interact with the utility because we know what we're using, we know when we're using it, we know how we're using it. For example, a third of your electricity bill actually is water-related. So you might not look at your water bill, but you do look at your electricity bill. Once you see the connections, you can start using less water more effectively in every single walk of life. So, all of a sudden, the utility and policymakers are in the position where they can be informed. We move on from living in a world of guesstimates. Instead of a dribble of data, think about data in petabytes. You have utilities which used to run on little morsels of data, already now having to deal with 500 million units of data a day. And they're getting, you're creating loops of information because you know what's happening with that information. You know what matters. You know, you get greater confidence in your information. People are becoming informed. 90% of water assets are underground. They're out of sight, out of mind. As a result, pipes are just repaired when you assume they break down. What about living in a world where you actually know what their real condition is? Doesn't matter if they're 200 years ago old, if they're still working. Repair them when they're needed to. Repair them in the cheapest, most effective way, rather than a box-ticking exercise. So we become responsive. Then we can start predicting. There was a classic case last year when there were floods in northern England, and the Environment Agency said, well, our flood barriers all performed to expectation. The only problem was the water was 2 inches above. That's not good enough. You have to be able to model and predict to every eventuality. Nothing is fixed. Nothing is sacred. We are living in changing times, and climate change, attitude change, everything change. Being smart, being informed, is about being able to respond to things. Save money, save power, save energy, become carbon neutral, become carbon positive. Wastewater treatment works, smartly run, actually generate energy, so they run their own pumps. There are opportunities everywhere. Smart irrigation, for example. One of the worst things you can do with crops is over-irrigate. So if you actually need to put the amount of water is actually needed through for real time, through soil probes, you not only do you save water, you improve yields. Across the world, the democracy of smart water. In India, you get villagers who are using a smartphone, they can send up information about sanitation. Instead of waiting for government inspectors to come and fill their own agendas. In Kenya, you have people paying their utility bills through smart apps instead of having to spend 3 hours going to a town to pay a bill. It works for everyone. So when facts change, when we become informed, we can change. As I said earlier, there's very little in the way of disruptive technology, a big innovation. Smart water is not about big innovation. It's about the little things, putting the little things together in a holistic manner to create a great thing. It's about being positive, about being optimistic, that we can do things better for less money. How does it affect us personally? I think it's about taking that spirit, about making your message matter. It's taken me 10 years on one project to come to fruition. One of the reasons was I wasn't communicating it right. Another reason was the person there wasn't out there. Now it's happening. 10 years of waiting. Things happen. The patron saint of Wales, St. David, he was known as David the Waterman, because he only drank water. Dŵr, water, dŵ. Dŵr, dŵ. It's the same thing, it's all cyclical. Now, his last words were, Gwnewch y pethau bychain mewn bywyd. Do the little things in life. Do the little things in life. That's what matters. It's about doing little things well. Each little thing well, knitted together, pushing together. Do those little things and you get a greater thing. Do those little things together and you get a great thing. That is the essence of being smart. That is the essence of digital disruption. Everyone here, you can do one thing. Do it. Leave this room with one positive thing. Together, those little positive things, no matter how grand, how humble, how idealistic, how pragmatic, those little things knit together. Leave this room. Do the little things in life. And we, together, can do great things. Jochen Bauer, thank you.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.